When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palullo, who you can follow on X at Palullo, and Josh Jordan. He's at JoshJordan975. And in between our podcast episodes here, you can read their blogs covering Houston pro sports over on our flagship site, sportsmap.com. And just FYI, our Thursday episode is getting pushed back to Friday this week, so take note accordingly. On today's episode, the Astros find themselves in a familiar place, atop the division. Can Houston keep on keeping on? We take our best guesses at it. And one of the Astros' most exciting pitching prospects in the history of the organization is one step closer to parting ways from the team. So, gents, Astros go 4-2 on the roadie, winning back-to-back series against the Pirates and Guardians, going up by as many as 3.5 games in the West at one point, thanks to a 5-game Mariners skid. Look, it's a tale as old as time, or at least as old as recent memory. Houston's sluggish out the gate, chip away at the deficit, overtake a free-falling Mariners or Rangers team, and before you know it, the Astros find themselves in the top spot. Since losing the Rays series in Tampa back in mid-May, Houston has won or tied their last 5 series, winning 10 of 16 games over that span. With just over a month from the All-Star break, there's still a lot of baseball to be played. But how impressive is what the Astros are doing right now, considering that all the challenges, both health and performance, they face so far?
How impressive, you ask? In a word, very. In the near past, what a great week. They finally look like a good ball club on the road. Hadn't won any road series in 2 months. Okay, the Pirates are garbage. Well, they took 2 out of 3. And then go on to Cleveland, which is not garbage. The Guardians are right in the big pack of mediocre to slightly better clubs in the American League. And all right, you'd like to have polished off the sweep, but Meatloaf, 2 out of 3 in Cleveland, ain't bad. Couple that with the Mariners getting swept at home by the Orioles and then losing 2 out of 3 at the Angels. And the Astros are a +3 for the week and start this week at 2.5 games in front. Then there's the bigger picture that if we were told March 25th or shortly before the start of the season, 2/5 of the starting rotation would be rubbed out for the year, Blanco and Wesneski. The big offseason acquisition, Christian Walker, would be a big steaming turd 40% of the way through the season, right? 36 and 29 through Sunday, 65 out of 162 games. We're right at 40%, so we're not early, and Walker continues to steam. Right behind him in the lineup most days, Yiner Diaz. At least he's had more flashes than Walker, but look, that's damning with faint praise. It's not like Yiner Diaz has been a good player this season. Then you get to the guys who are supposed to be the anchors. Jose Altuve is a bad player so far this season, right? He had a terrific homestand, and then back on the road, since the 4-for-4 game against Oakland, his OPS is 502 over his last 10 games for the season. He's 702. Add in the defense and the base running, Jose Altuve is a sub-zero WAR player still. And then you have Yordan Alvarez, who's played in less than half the games, and the 29 games he played in before, oh yeah, it turned out he had a broken hand. Yordan was a bad player. So you add all of that up, and they're 2.5 games atop the division, starting a homestand in which they see the White Sox for 3. And, life is good. Hell of a lot better than you think it would be with everything I just rattled through.
The pitching is keeping them in games. That's why they're doing what they're doing. On this road trip, they go 4-2. They average 3.6 runs per game. They only allow 2.3. So there you have it. And that's kind of the magical formula with the Astros. When they can get to 4 runs, you feel like they have a great chance of winning the game. But it's so often you find yourself in the 5th inning and they haven't scored yet. So that could be a challenge. But you got to give it up to these pitchers that they brought up. They've done very well. The Sugarland Express, they've done a good job. I know Colton Gordon's only going 5 innings in his couple of starts. Gusto has kind of been an issue because he can't seem to get through five innings, but he's only given up two or three runs. So keeping you in the ballgame, not the end of the world. And then Brandon Walter, he's gone six innings and five innings in his two outings. So maybe the bullpen, you know, maybe they won't get gassed as soon as we thought they would if these guys can keep it up. It really is amazing, though, how they can bring up these pitchers from the minor leagues and then they fit right in and are productive players. Whereas with the hitters, it's more of a challenge. I will say it's kind of fun watching Jacob Melton. We've heard about him for so long, and now we actually get to see him play. And he made that beautiful diving catch the other day and got his first RBI. So maybe there's something there. You got a lot of speed in that outfield, but I don't know. I think it's something fun to watch. You wonder if the Chaz McCormick experiment is possibly over or if Melton's going to be a guy that goes back down. We'll see, and we got to wait with DeZinto as well. I did notice that Dana Brown said on the flagship that Yordan's getting closer, that he might be ready to pick up a bat this week. So that I know it doesn't sound like much, Charlie, but I'm like, didn't we just say, oh, yeah, we found a fracture in his hand and we're not going to hit him for a while. Now we're talking about him picking up a bat, 1 week rest. Okay, if that's what the doctors are saying. But if it is right and he is feeling better, hey, that's good news. Maybe he'll be back and they'll score more than three or four runs more often. That would be fantastic. Take a bit of pressure off this pitching staff.
Going into the season, the thinking was the pitching would be the bedrock of this club, especially the starting pitching. And it's been a winding road to get where they are, but it's been the case because the star-level guys have been star-level guys. Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez as good as any 1-2 combo atop a rotation in Major League Baseball. And Presley gone. So what? He wasn't that great here last season. Abreu elevated to where he should have been last season as the eighth inning guy. Hader and Abreu as good as any back end of the bullpen tandem in the game so far this season. Right? The Astros start the week 10th in the American League in runs scored per game. That's below average. They're fifth in ERA. That's above average. The pitching is more above average, I think, than the offense is below average. And you add that up, and the team is above average. And they've been better than we've seen sometimes in the last couple of years in one-run games and in extra inning games. Those close-on-the-margin things that can go one way one year and go the other way the other year for no logical reason. But it's a scrappy, gritty group with room for improvement. Now, of course, there's room for fall off, but I think the big one is getting Yordan back gives the chance for the offense to move up. And Josh, one thing that you said I want to tack on to the speed in the outfield when Melton is out there with Myers. The Astros' overall defense has been terrific this season, right? Altuve is not a good left fielder, but you're less involved defensively in left field. And while Dubon and Rogers are a combo platter of bleh offensively, the defense has been superior. The Astros' infield defense, excellent. Two-thirds of the outfield. Myers, of course, is the staple in center. Whether Melton or Cam Smith or both are in there, they're plus when they're on the field. And the Astros' defense has nudged this team forward above what maybe the offense and pitching, just taken as a twosome, would have them.
Yeah, and I'd say Jacob Melton is fitting right in on this team. Good defender, not an encouraging start with the bat. He did have that 2-for-4 game in the Pirates finale, which prompted someone in our comment section after our last episode to come and say, oh, I wonder what they think of Melton now. Well, guess what? He's hitting 150. So, yeah, I think it's the exact same thing I said then, which is we'll see. I'm not going to overreact one way or the other. He didn't get called up because he was tearing the cover off the ball. He got called up out of necessity. But let's see what the young man can do. He's shown flashes with the leather. I like the athleticism. Hopefully he does well. I mean, we want the team to do well for no other reason than a selfish reason of it. The engagement goes up. Since we're talking about the Sugarland guys getting called up, I've seen a lot of people talking about where's Shea Whitcomb. We finally saw him on Sunday. He went hitless, but I thought it was odd to have him ride the bench for so long and kind of cool him off before you bring him into some random Sunday getaway game. So just an odd way to use the guy. Like if you weren't going to use him, like I don't know why they called him up anyway, but I'd want to move on to, we've been talking about how for a while now, how Houston has had this opportunity to take advantage of this stretch, to make hay during a soft schedule. They've got the White Sox and Twins at home coming up, and then on the road to face the A's and Angels. You guys covered it, but Jeremy Pena and Jake Myers keep finding all sorts of ways to get on base, infield hits and bloops. The defense and the pitching keeps rolling at a high level. Flip side of that, Isak Paredes, while having some timely hits in the Guardian series, still seems to be scuffling. Charlie, you mentioned it. Altuve is cooled back off again. And Christian Walker is just battling hard to be the easiest out on the team, carrying the lowest batting average and on-base percentage of any of the regular lineup. And we don't know what the ETA is, but likely no Yordan and Arrigetti until after the All-Star break. So not that it matters a whole lot, but I just wonder what you guys think. How do you like Houston's chances of holding on to the division lead going into the break?
Well, I'll take them. And for no other reason, what are the Mariners showing us? I mean, they've been baseball bipolar, started 4-8, then ripped off an 18-6 run. Since then, 11-17 through Sunday. Losers of 10 of their last 14. And Jorge Polanco, who the Astros pursued in the offseason, and the Mariners offered just enough for him to stay in Seattle. And then he's hitting 395 a month into the season while the Astros are playing Rodgers, hitting maybe 95. Well, Jorge Polanco's 14 for his last 94. That's 149. What goes up often comes down. Julio Rodriguez, I mean, he's been great in the second half the last couple of seasons, but he's having another mediocrity-laden first half, and Seattle with the pitching injuries. Hey, the Mariners could get hot again and roll, but I don't see any particular reason to think, oh, of course they're going to be three games better than the Astros between now and the All-Star break. The Astros are starting 13 games in 13 days Tuesday, so that'll be a six-man rotation. Walter probably earned himself at least one, if not two more starts through that stretch. Gordon will be in there, and then the four guys, they hope to stay healthy the rest of the way. The last week before the All-Star break, the Astros have home games against the Rangers and Guardians, while the Mariners go on the road, three at the Yankees, three at the Tigers, the clear two best teams in the American League. So if the Astros are ahead of them as we speak, and the Astros have the easier schedule between now and the break, I'm not going to quite say they better be ahead of the Mariners at the All-Star break, but I think the odds favor so, and then they're in Seattle to play the Mariners first series out of the All-Star break.
Yeah, I like their chances. Just as long as the pitching holds up and they could stay healthy, knock on wood, I think that'll continue. And they're showing you they can win with just a mid offense. I looked it up before we did the video. 15th in OPS, just right in the middle is where the Astros are. 19th in homers. So still not a lot of power coming from them. 20th in runs in all of baseball. So bottom third there. But they're getting it done with pitching and some timely hitting. And Paredes, yeah, he didn't have a good week in the last seven games, 217 average, but OPS over 900 because of the three home runs. So he's doing it in other ways. Maybe some encouragement here that Yiner Diaz is finally starting to get going over his last seven games. He's hitting 300 with an OPS of about 750. So maybe Yiner's starting to get something going there. I'm disappointed with Christian Walker because 167 in his last seven games. I know he's hitting some balls hard, OPS under 500. And I just looked it up. I was curious. Last 30 days, hitting 198 with an OPS under 600. It makes you wonder if it's going to happen for him. And man, with him hitting fourth every day, it's just, I don't know how much longer they can keep doing that. It's just truly amazing. As you mentioned earlier, Brandon, Jeremy Pena and Jake Myers have been carrying this offense. It has been a wild season so far.
Pena had his 13-game hitting streak snapped Sunday. During the hitting streak, .426 batting average, four doubles, three homers, seven stolen bases over the 13 games, OPS over 1,100, as we talked last week, just about locking down his first American League All-Star spot. And then Jake Myers, I mean, it was Jake and little else Sunday against the Guardians, a four-hit game to get back over 300 for the season heading into the White Sox series. Who had that happening? Answer, nobody.
It sounds like fan fiction. Pena and Jake Myers going crazy. You would have thought that was fan fiction if you would have told me that last year. I guess the X factor to me, and this is, Charlie, what you mentioned, that the Mariners are, they have those bipolar tendencies, so they're streaky. They could go on a streak, but the key to me is Houston's consistency. It's been slow and steady. So I'll take slow and steady to win the race, at least until the All-Star break. We'll see what happens after that. But going back to the first topic, I just don't think it can be overstated how impressive it is that they're here at this moment right now without having Jordan played for however many games, you know, for the majority of the season so far, and to have 3/5 of their starting lineup having gone down and relying on a fresh from rehab Lance McCullers. It's just been really amazing to see. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on this show, contact our friends at the sales team, houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link is also in our description. So gents, Sunday morning news broke that former number one pitching prospect Forrest Whitley was DFA'd to make room for Brandon Walter on the roster. Whitley was carrying a 12.27 ERA over 7 1/3 innings pitched this season. Chandler Rome pointed out in his article that the last three appearances for Whitley came in mop-up duty, where he surrendered 7 earned runs and 4 2/3 innings. Houston has 7 days to trade or pass him through waivers. His history and lack of options will likely scare off a lot of teams. If he does clear waivers, he could end up back in Sugarland. But Whitley's had a rough ride from being that highly coveted prospect to being DFA'd after just 10 2/3 innings in the bigs. If this is the end of Whitley's time in the Houston organization, what are your main takeaways from this disappointing saga?
It's just the latest exhibit. I mean, he's been an ongoing exhibit, but a final nail in a coffin on the alternate definition of potential that I use. Everything one has yet to achieve. And he exploded on the scene as a professional, 17th pick, when Jeff Luhnow's regime tabbed him in the first round. By the end of his first year in the organization, he was considered, if not the best, one of the two or three very best pitching prospects in all of the game. Then injuries undermined himself with a 50-game drug suspension, but then more injuries, and that his time here presumably ends with an earned run average of 8.44. The entire curriculum vitae, 10 2/3 innings pitched, 14 hits, 9 walks. He did get more than $3 million to sign out of high school, and he's banked a few hundred thousand more since then. You know, he's not the first heavily hyped and touted with justification prospect in Astros history, much less all across Major League Baseball, to amount to nothing. But his big league career as a Houston Astro essentially amounted to nothing.
I remember we did a topic not that long ago where we were like, who do you think will make a bigger impact this year, Whitley or Lance McCullers? And boy, it didn't take long, if things keep going like this, for us to get our answer. And I mean, honestly, out of those two guys, you'd rather it be Lance with all the money that you're paying him and what you've seen in his career for him to stay healthy and make the bigger impact on the team. But, man, it's been a long road for Forrest Whitley. I think 2016 technically was when he was drafted, if I'm right. So we're in 2025. So, I mean, if you can't do it in almost a decade, it's probably just not going to happen. And it's never been about the tools. The guy's always throwing hard. It's just gives up a lot of hard contact, kind of wild in the strike zone. So disappointing. I can't remember from the Chronicle, Greg Rajan, I apologize if I'm saying that wrong. He put out a tweet I saw over the weekend just talking about how Jeff Luhnow's last few draft picks, he didn't really hit on him. We hold him in such high regard, but, you know, Forrest Whitley and then Bukauskas, Seth Beer, Corey Lee, like none of these guys have really gone on to become like really great big league ball players. So even somebody like Jeff Luhnow that we regard so highly, even he had some big misses in the draft. So with Dana Brown, you know, jury's still out. We'll see what happens with Bryce Matthews and some of these other guys. But yeah, the draft, it's a crapshoot. It really is. And just like last year when we were worried about the Kikuchi trade, so far it hasn't really made much of a difference trading those prospects away.
It's different than the NFL. Plenty of first rounders in baseball just never make it at all. So what can be said for Forrest Whitley? Well, he does go down as a colossal bust flop, especially after the way he started in the minor leagues to boost his stature. Hey, in the history of mankind, there are fewer than 24,000 men who have pitched or played in a big league game. Forrest Whitley is one of them, right? He did get there in his limited time, but you know, he's still better than one percenter by that criterion. Fewer than 24,000 people ever have made it to the major leagues. And he did.
And I don't want to be redundant here, but yeah, I'm on the same page as both of you guys. Like baseball more than any other sport is so hard to convert collegiate or developmental talent to the professional level. Nothing is guaranteed in life, but even less in MLB prospects. Don't get too attached. Hope for the best. Expect the worst. You'll never be disappointed.
And the biggest risk group is high school pitchers. And Forrest Whitley was a high school phenom.
Indeed. We'll see how the story goes. One last reminder, if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts and apps like Apple or Spotify, please give us a 5-star rating while you're here. Like I said in the open, our next scheduled episode drops a day later this week on Friday. So make sure you're subscribed to this channel because we also drop emergency episodes as news breaks. So make sure you get those notifications on. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. And until next time, go Astros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own. Surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.